Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Beyond AIO from Odyssey Geek. This is Austin once again, and once again, Michael Lefebvre is back with me to talk about Paws and Tails. Welcome back, Michael.
Once again, it's been so long. It's ridiculous. Hello, sir. It's good to be back here.
Yeah, for context, we're recording this the day after Christmas. Yeah, it's been a while.
But I'm excited. I love these episodes, so I'm ready to talk about them.
All right, awesome. Well, before we do that, there is some news in the Paws and Tails world, and it is sad news. This happened back in August. On August 14th of 2022, David Heath, who is the narrator for Paws and Tails, passed away of pancreatic cancer. He was 69 years old. And it came as a big blow to me because I didn't know that he was sick, and I'd heard him in audio drama stuff. He's in Jonathan Park, he's in the original Adventures and the New Adventures. The New Adventures, he's Stell's Uncle Derek, and the Adventure, he was Moses, which he did phenomenal with that role. But for me, the longest time I've heard him was on Paws and Tails, and for the longest time, I did not know that he was the same person that played some very different characters on the original Jonathan Park Adventures. I helped Audio Theater Central get together a tribute post on their website, and J.D. Sutter contacted some people that had worked with David Heath, got some testimonials or some like tribute stuff about David Heath, and I was going to pick out a couple from the Paws and Tails area here. So this one here is from Eric Basil, who is the sound designer for Paws and Tails. He's directed some episodes. He's also the voice of Ned. He says, most of the Paws and Tails episodes were recorded after the production team relocated from Anaheim, California to Plano, Texas in 2001. While we chose to recast some of our characters when we got to Texas, there were some that simply could not be replaced. David King is Papa Chuck. Susan Clausen is Goose. David brought a warmth to our narrator that perfectly captured the time and place of Wildwood. His friendly, folksy presence offered an irresistible invitation to sit a spell and hear a good story. David made you want to listen. Many years ago, my wife and I started a Bible study that had an audio Bible as a companion to the study guide. I remember the first time I heard David's voice reading scripture to me from the speaker across the room and thought, hey, I know that guy. Of course, David was in demand as a voice artist, I knew that, but at once it became real for me. David will always be with me in two of the things I will enjoy the rest of my life, God's Word and Paws and Tails. There's a part of production that is a bit like Christmas, when all the voice tracks, scores, and lesson songs finally arrive on the editing desk, the unwrapping of each wonderful element, and the anticipation of putting them all together to make something shiny and new is not unlike a kid opening his presents on Christmas morning. I got to have the fun of joining the scores of David's narrations, I mean the first one to go on the journeys he'd invite the listeners to. Those journeys are ones my family has taken over and over, and thousands of others who have listened to Paws and Tails over the years have enjoyed. While I will miss talking to David about his faith, his family, and adventures of being a voice artist, I am grateful I can still journey along with him every time I hear him say, howdy, and welcome to Wildwood.
Aw, that's awesome. Thank you to Eric Basil for that great testimony. Or eulogy.
Yeah, it's really great stuff there. And I didn't know that he had done, I think I might have heard he'd done some narration, but I didn't know he did it for the Bible, but he did it for King James Version, English Standard Version, and I think NLRV, I can't remember what that stands for. I think it's those three.
New Living Revised something.
Okay, yeah, I think it's those three.
That's awesome.
But yeah, that was some really, really great stories from him there. And we got a short one here from David Carl, the creator of Paws and Tails and writer and director for many of the episodes. He says, I believe I met David for the first time in 1999 as he auditioned for Paws and Tails. Eric and I listened to his performance and looked at each other in surprise. We knew instantly he was our warm, folksy, and welcoming narrator. David was always a consummate professional and a pleasure to work with. I miss you, David, and I look forward to being welcomed by you to our true home one day.
Mm, that's great.
Last one here, I'm not reading all of it since a lot of it was about another series he worked on, but this is from John Fornoff. And this part here just really warmed my heart. He says, when I got news about his cancer, I called David. He was unexpectedly upbeat, almost to the point of enthusiastic. Most of us had the goal of living well, of living life to the fullest. But David shared with me his goal now. I want to die well. He wanted to make the most of every moment left. David, you achieve your goal. The way you face your challenge inspires all of us to live all of life well, including death. The work you did here remains with us as your loving tribute to God. Thank you. We're grateful to God for granting us the gift of you.
Wow.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, my grandpa, my mom's dad, says something similar before he died. He had cancer too. And I think the doctors had told him that basically his cancer is basically terminal. And he said something like, I've been living all my life for this moment or something like that. And that's such a great testimony to be ready to leave this world and know that you've been living your life to that point and that you're right with your creator, you're right with your God. And that you're ready to meet him in heaven.
There's something that's not only unique to audio drama, but that's unique to different content when you lend your voice or your likeness or your talent in your appearance, whether that's your voice or something on camera, to a project. And that's if you put your heart into that project, if you make that project worth it and have it be something that people enjoy, something that's well done, that's going to inspire so many people. And I think Eric Basil put that well. And so today, as we're reviewing these episodes and talking about the narration here and there, he's still with us in a sense, and his work is still continuing to impact people, just as it's going to continue to impact me for the rest of this series. And that's really impactful as I continue to listen and to associate his voice with, wow, he really lived a life that was well spent.
Yes, exactly. And unfortunately, I believe he passed away before we recorded anything for the new Paws and Tails episode. So that's going to be kind of difficult going into that series or the new episodes with a different narrator. But yeah, we still have these to appreciate.
You know, I'm not in the loop as far as all these go. So I don't know if there's going to be like a bonus episode or something where they have a tribute to everyone who's passed on or moved on since season three. But I'm assuming they're going to have something to acknowledge him.
Hopefully we'll do something like that. Or they might do like a bonus episode in the podcast feed for the episodes. Maybe that'd be nice. All right. So let's go and talk about the episodes for today.
Ooh, these are good.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure about one of the episodes, but I know there's a lot of great things to talk about here.
I've got points, but they're nothing episode breaking. I'll say that. They're fine.
Okay. All right, so episode number 23, Plans in the Breaking, and episode number 24, The Scarlet Stain. So the first episode, Plans in the Breaking, was written by Gary Armstrong. Script supervisor was Phil Lawler. Directed by David Carl. Music by John Campbell. Sound design by Jerry Swofford. And the song, God Works All Things Out for Good, by Sandy Howe and Nick Brown. So I want to start out this saying, this episode probably is the most listened to episode of Paws and Tails for me.
Oh!
Two very good reasons. The first reason is, this episode, the first episode of Paws and Tails I owned, officially.
Uh-huh.
So I was one of those kids back in the day that, you know, recorded radio shows onto cassette tapes on Saturday morning, and I had recorded a lot of Paws and Tails episodes, but this was one I missed on the radio. And I remember one summer, I think it was a summer or something like that, I heard on the radio that they had some promotional thing where if you contacted them, they'd send you a free CD with a Paws and Tails episode on it. And this episode was on that CD. And I think I still have it
awesome. Somewhere.
I mean, my sisters might have it. But I listened to that quite a bit because it was a little more easier to play than a cassette tape. And for a second reason, it's a very good episode. I know I'm starting at the very beginning with my take on this episode, but I think this is possibly
go for it.
The best episode of season one.
Oh, wow.
Probably one of the best episodes of the whole series.
Wouldn't go that far. I do have to disagree with you there. It didn't hit me in the same way. Definitely not the same way that Standing Alone did. Or there was an episode, wasn't there an episode recently that I really, really liked? I'm trying to remember which one that one was. It's been so long, man.
That was probably Tiffany Cometh. Does that sound right?
Tiffany Cometh was good. That was good.
Or Snake Oil?
Not Snake Oil.
The Honey Buzz Principle?
Honey Buzz Principle is also good. I'd say those three. I need to go back and re-listen to this whole thing. It's been... I haven't listened to the first episode since we reviewed it. But going back through, I do have a couple issues that kind of irked me about either the production or different choices that were made in the writing for this episode. So I don't think it's my favorite, but it is good. It accomplishes its goal. And as far as the story goes, it's well constructed. So nice job to Gary Armstrong for doing this.
Yeah, I would say it's probably one of my favorite episodes as well. I don't know if I consider my absolute favorite, but it's really high up there.
Okay.
But I do agree with you about some of the very noticeable critiques that you can get out of this.
Uh-huh.
For one, this episode takes place during like transition period from like California actors to the Texas actors.
Right.
So we have like a new voice for Nana Cindy. Chris Anthony's not playing her anymore.
What? When was she in an episode previously? Because I don't remember her. Where was she before?
Nana Cindy. She was in The Perfect Christmas Gift.
Oh, that's why. It was like last year that we talked about that one. Or was that before last year? It would have been last year.
It was like January of 2021, I think.
Good. Last year. Oh, no. That was more. We've been doing this for so long, Austin.
I know. We got to speed up. We got to speed up.
I'm 21 years old now. I was like 19 when we started this thing. Sir.
But yeah. So we have a new voice for her. We have a temporary new voice for Mr. Crawford. Yeah. It will go back to
Steve Bridges.
Steve Bridges, yeah, after this one.
I was sad to hear he was gone.
Yeah. And also, especially listening to it in headphones, there are a lot of production elements with this, either sound effects or things that are just too dry, not as much effects done on it. I'm sure you could probably point some out.
Okay, so there are two that are the most glaring. Chronologically, the first one is when Nana Cindy says, "Now you two get on up to Lake Blossom before it gets too late," or whatever. And then there's a pause where Mr. Lilly's in the elevator talking about the places he's been. And then the pause goes on for a little while. And I thought, wait, you get on up there? Did they just leave him in the elevator? And then, Papa Chuck goes ahead and opens up the elevator. So I think with a little bit of a change in the dialogue, it could have been made more clear what was going on. But then something that I think is the fault of the sound design is when Papa Chuck is on the ground and there's the guy there with him. Oh, yeah, I forgot. We usually do chronological reviews of these episodes, so sorry I'm jumping around here.
That's fine.
But when his back is hurting, he's telling Stacy the plan, and she goes and starts to go up the tree. We hear no sound effects of her running off. We don't even get a break in between his line and then him praying for her. But he says a line, then he prays for her, and then we hear rustling in the tree. As it's a perspective shift of her being up in the tree. And all of that is really abrupt and something that I feel like a bit more pitter-patter of her running on the path or running to the tree would have been a bit more helpful. But I could still pick up what was going on. And the script itself carries this episode. It's very well written.
So we start this episode with Papa Chuck and Nana Cindy, which it's kind of unusual for that. Usually we start with the kids. We hear Papa Chuck having back problems, and
he slept on a brick or slept on concrete.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, was that a, what did he say?
I think he says,
I should know what he says.
Was that a mattress I slept on or concrete or something like that?
I think he said a rock.
A rock? Oh, okay. Well,
yeah,
my bad.
Close enough.
See, I've only heard this twice. You've heard this, what, dozens of times? There you go.
I love their back and forth for their dialogue, like this kind of gentle teasing, you know, like he says, oh, you know how pretty you are? And she says, I know, and downright beautiful when I'm making apple pie. And then he says, it's true.
He's like, so make some apple pie so you stay beautiful. Okay. That would have been funny.
She suggests that he goes fishing just to take a day off, and
yep.
He gets ready to do that, and then Stacy appears, and she's not having a good day, and it's only 9.
Yeah. It's because she got up with Goose to, what were they fiddling with a sundial or something, and they had it turned the wrong way, and Goose was probably like, oh, I need to go, and then just ran away because she thought it was 3 hours late, and Stacy was like, no, that's so sad.
Well, that joke, again, as a kid, I didn't recognize really what it meant a whole lot. But the older I got, like, oh, man, that is so funny.
Because the
joke hit me a lot more. Yeah, because, like, you know, you have to have it very exact to get the right thing. And if you have it wrong, you'll be totally confused at what time of day it is.
Well, it's funny because the whole point was that they were trying to get the sundial to work in the first place. So you think they would already have some kind of reliable timepiece there with them.
Yeah.
But Goose would obviously just ignore that because she's so impetuous. That's funny.
Well, she's easily distracted, too.
I'm done. There's some great Goose quotes in the next episode.
Yeah. So with this one, Stacy, she's trying to find something to do. The library's closed. CJ is helping his dad at the office. Marsha has the flu. And Ned is mad about not getting a lead in the play. He's not even leaving the house.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I didn't pick
great
up on that.
Foreshadowing.
Oh, no. Oh, my boy Ned. I'm concerned for him.
But yeah, I didn't notice this for a while. It foreshadows 2 episodes. So it foreshadows the next episode we're going to be talking about and the following episode where we'll actually hear
what?
That play they're talking about.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. That's fun. I thought we were going to hear the resolution to the Ned storyline in the very next episode. I thought, oh, that'd be okay.
Don't get your hopes up.
No, we'll talk about it. I'm very grateful you're not spoiling me, sir, but I can make whatever conjectures, and I know I'm not spoiling people because I have no idea what's going to happen. Timothy Ellerslie and Ned Stepanoff, I have no idea.
But yeah, it's a line that could be seen as a throwaway line, but it's very important once you hear the following episodes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Stacy also is upset because she has a compact her grandmother gave her that was cracked.
What's
and she
a
wants
compact?
Papa Chuck to fix it.
I don't know what that is.
I didn't know that either as a kid, but I think for context and the older I got, I realized I think it's like a kind of like a makeup kind of mirror kit thing.
Oh, okay. I figured.
I think it's like a little round thing, like it pops up with a mirror. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, my mom has one of those.
We know it has a mirror of some kind, but again, this is like back in the 1800s, early 1900s. For me, it's a term that's not as common nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Well, good on them to put that little bit in there. I don't know if it was common in the early 2000s, but at least for the time that this is set, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And then Mr. Crawford shows up with a bushel of baskets.
A bushel of apples, right?
Yeah, apples. Apples are in the baskets.
And Papa Chuck's like, what do you need? And he's like, what? And he's like, well, I mean, basically the implication is the apples aren't for nothing. He's like, oh, well, I mean, I guess my sink is dripping, so.
Well, now that you brought it up.
Real quick, there's a line from Nana Cindy before that where she talks about, or where Stacy talks about how the compact, the mirror is broken. And Papa Chuck says, put it right here on the table. When we get back, and then Nana Cindy speaks up, you'll forget it. Or I could just put it in my pocket.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very relatable for some people.
But Mr. Crawford is there.
Yeah, and he wants him to fix the sink. And they're still planning on going fishing, but they're going to do this first. And they make it to the shop and fixes it. And Officer Hunt shows up. And he's, I guess, like a troop leader, kind of like Boy Scouts, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They call the Wilderness Rangers. Yeah.
And Ned's a part of them, actually. Wait, is he?
Really?
Eric Basil's one of them.
Yeah, Eric Basil voices one of the characters, but I don't think it's Ned.
Nah, okay. That makes sense.
Different kind of voice, and also Ned's still in his house, I guess.
Yeah, that wouldn't work with continuity. Anyway.
Yeah, but he talks about how he's gonna be getting signal mirrors in case you need to signal somebody, which I don't think I'd ever heard of that being a thing before, too. Again, this is like back before a lot of the technology we have now. Like, I think at this point, even before radio. So, I guess that would be something that would be really useful. Kind of like smoke signals, I guess, maybe.
There's a movie I'm thinking of that I used to watch as a kid where somebody's got a mirror and is flashing it at somebody. I don't remember which movie it is, but that's something I was familiar with. So, as soon as later on in the episode when Papa Chuck says they need to send a signal of some sort, I thought, oh, it's building toward that. Great foreshadowing.
Yeah, great build up there.
Yep.
And it's all kind of funny, too, about the medical kit that Mr. Crawford tries to sell them. And, you know, bandages, salve, mosquito balm.
How about some soap?
Yeah, he sells them on that. And he looks at the old medicine kit, you know, half a bottle of iodine, old Band-Aids, like 3 years old or whatever. Like, if that's really all Officer Hunt has, that's really irresponsible.
Hey, yeah, you need to be able to help people, buddy.
Like, oh, we can tough it. We're really going out in the wilderness. We're really going to rough it out there.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, fortunately, it all ends up being useful.
Yeah. We don't hear about the soap. The soap isn't as useful as the mirrors, I guess.
No, you see, they wanted to make a good impression on this random guy, so they all washed themselves before they ran through. No, never mind. We can go on.
Or maybe they used that to wash his cut or bruise or something like
that.
Yeah,
possibly. I don't know.
Well, they finally leave, and we actually hear, I think, the very first car we've heard in Wildwood.
Oh!
Because we don't hear cars very often.
Yeah, there was one where there was the... Was it the skunk on the side of the road? What was that?
He had a wagon, but I thought it was a horse-drawn wagon or something like that.
Okay. Well, that makes sense why the car breaks down. But also, Papa Chuck seems to know quite a bit about the car because he knows exactly what to do with the carburetor, mm-hmm. Was it?
I think something like that. He does better than George Barkley does with his van or his car.
The cap popped off.
Uh-huh.
Is that the original actor for Mrs. Collins?
No, it's a different actress, but it will go back to the original after this one. Like I said, this is a kind of a weird transition episode where they're choosing, I guess, like which actors are going to keep from California, which ones are going to replace from the ones in Texas.
Well, that makes complete sense because most of my notes are just this acting / directing seems off, but that would make sense if they were expecting to have the original actors that didn't have time for the director for David Carl to prepare these new actors for the role. That makes sense.
So, when he's fixing the car, he needs a handkerchief, and I guess he's doing that to make sure he doesn't burn his paw.
Well, then he just keeps the handkerchief, though?
Yeah, like, oh, she has others. Like, I mean, she is a fairly wealthy person, and she's also very generous, too.
That's fair. She should have given a black tube while she was at it.
That may be helpful or not. Who knows? But anyway, Stacy brings up kind of like the moral or like the lesson. Like she's wondering, like, you know, why is all these bad things happening? Like,
is God making all these bad things happening?
Yeah, this is like the second, I think it's the second interruption I think they've had.
Yeah.
And she asks, you know, like, why does God cause things to go wrong? And Papa Chuck responds with, you know, things go wrong just fine on their own. And then she asks, why doesn't he stop them from going wrong. Basically, God is in control, working everything out for the best. He doesn't always consult our schedule. It's kind of a simplified version of what they're teaching. They'll talk about it a little bit more at the end. I think that part there might sound a little bit almost too on the nose.
No, you
see, at this point.
If I can say something here.
Okay, go ahead.
I just realized this may not be my favorite episode, but this is my favorite episode with Papa Chuck, or my favorite portrayal of him, because we start the episode with him. I love that we do that, because we get to see things from a very real perspective. It's not that he knows everything that's going on, or that he knows more than Stacy, or that he has a different agenda than she does. He wants to go fishing just as much as she does, and she's the one who's here to ask questions and bring out what his perspective on why all this is happening is. And he's very real with her. He doesn't hold anything back in that conversation about why things are going wrong. He just gives the best answer he has at the moment and says, well, these things are happening because, well, God knows more than we do, and God doesn't always consult our schedule on what things should happen when. That's the one line I have written down here because I really liked that. And if the episode had ended there and there wasn't the interruption that happens later, that would be a good lesson. That would be something that Stacy could take away from it. But then later on, when he's injured or when his back isn't doing so well, and then they have the whole talk about what happened after that, it was a moment for him to be vulnerable and to see how she would react, and then give her an even better lesson and a better insight because of it. So I like how it's not that he's saving the moral, saving the theme, and the writer isn't saving the theme for the end of the episode. It's sprinkled throughout and given in a very natural way. Really like how he's written here.
Okay. Like, I didn't really think that much before, but at this point, I felt like a little bit odd that it was so soon. Maybe after a third one, maybe? But the way you present it, I think I do agree with you.
Yeah, and it makes sense for Stacy to be asking this question because she's had like four things that have gone wrong already. Like the whole reason she's there in the first place is because
that is
of
right.
News and the library.
Okay,
and she's
I forgot
already
about
ticked.
That.
She's been and her she's got a new actor too, right?
I think she was in the Hullabaloo at Hunker Hill. I think that's the new
okay,
one.
Okay.
I think it's when they started the new ones for CJ and Stacy.
Whoever's portraying her is giving her a very annoyed tone of voice in this episode.
Mm.
It works.
And it works. It's realistic.
Yep.
Speaking of interruptions, they get interrupted again because someone from the
hotel.
Well, they come and say that someone's stuck in the elevator and she has to get another toolbox. And Papa Chuck thinks, okay, maybe this won't happen. We're probably not going to go fishing now. And I was thinking about this. It took me a while to realize this, like, you know, because the time period this is, like, elevator's a thing at that point. So at one point after listening to this episode, I researched it, and there, even before, like, the early 1900s, elevators were used in a commercial setting, I think, like, from, like, hotels or businesses or something like that, not, like, you know, the ones we have now, and they were fairly safe. In my mind at the time, I was picturing, like, you know, those big metal doors you gotta pry open and wiring or whatever. At this point now, too, I still picture that in my mind because I would think an older elevator would be a little bit harder to get or a little bit easier to get open, but I don't know. I'm not an expert on historical elevators.
So Papa Chuck opens the elevator and Mr. Lily gets out. Then they hear from inside and he goes, what? And then the elevator just like pops up because all the weight's done with it and Goose is underneath holding it up. And Papa Chuck's like, what are you doing? And she says, I don't know, but I'm done. Like, that's how the elevator works. It's just Goose the whole time. No, I don't know. That was dumb.
It's a little known fact that weasels are very strong.
Yes, yes! There we go.
Come on, Michael, you're slipping.
It's been a year and a half since I heard that one, man. No, it's been like 2 years.
I'm glad I at least thought of that. That was perfect.
It's good to be back.
But I find it really funny that he gets him distracted, not Goose, Mr. Lily distracted and telling about all the places he's been a salesman to.
I love,
and names
yeah.
all these cities.
All the characters and all the different ways that they act, and Papa Chuck's just going around and being himself with them is awesome to hear.
Yeah. And then Nana Cindy comes by, and she says she made some pies and got some for their lunch. And she warns them that someone else is wanting him to fix something. And I love this line. And then Stacy starts talking about what's happening. And then Papa Chuck brings up, when God closes the door, and then Nana Cindy says, says, when God opens the door, he opens a, and then Nana Cindy interrupts with pie shop.
Oh, come on.
Great way to flip the script on that that oft-used phrase.
I sincerely hope he was going to say he opens another door, because saying opens a window doesn't make any sense, as Ryan has recently enlightened me.
Yes, I remember hearing that.
Here's something I don't know how much I liked about the plot here. Alternatively, instead of bribing, distracting these other people with pies, why doesn't Papa Chuck just be a little bit more assertive and say, hey, I know you got something you need to fix. I'm really sorry, but I need to go. Rather than distracting them. It seems more straightforward to just say, I'm sorry, but we've been trying to have this fishing day all day. I can get to you tomorrow.
Yeah, well, he does that with Mrs. Collins because she asks if he can fix it or look at it today. He said, afraid not, and then we have a fishing trip.
Okay, yeah, why does he
need to... I'm guessing he knows her maybe a little bit more, that she would take it. Maybe he doesn't know, I guess, Norman?
Yeah.
Or Norm as much. He hasn't learned about the no factor yet.
Yeah, it seems like he would be the kind of guy who can't say no, but I think there's more potential in growing his character and having him, like, learn how to tell people, yeah, no, I need to pass on that for today, than to have this creative solution of the pies. Because he mentions it at the end of the episode, hey, if she hadn't made those pies, then we wouldn't have been able to get here in time. Not necessarily. You could have just said no.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a nitpick. I mean, it's sort of the plot, sort of part of the plot, but it's not the main part, so it's not huge to me.
Well, one part of the plot is Mr. Lily is very grateful, and he gives him the silver speckled wiggling flopper, guaranteed to catch a whopper. Really fancy lure.
I'm just thinking, if this were a video game, and your side quest would be free Mr. Lily from the elevator, your reward, a lure. It's just what it's popped into my head. I thought, I know this isn't that, but that was kind of funny.
It's different when you call it the silver speckled wiggling flopper.
The silver speckled wiggling flopper?
Yeah, it's a lot more impressive and fun to say that.
Than a lure.
They finally make their escape and get to the lake.
Yeah, good lake sound effects. I like these.
But no fish.
No, unfortunately. And that's a normal thing. And Papa Chuck says, no, it's normal when you're fishing, I think this is an implication. And he also says to her that she's missing the point. The point of fishing is just to sit still or to just sit and think or to make conversation or whatever he says, right?
Something like that. But if they had gotten there a little bit earlier, because I think I've heard that, you know, fish are easier to get or more likely to bite earlier in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Stacy finally does get a fish, a really big one.
Because she uses the silver speckled wiggling flopper for it.
Yep. Oh, we don't know that. Oh, yeah, well, you do.
Yeah.
She does mention it. The funny one from the guy at the hotel. She doesn't say the whole name.
Well, because all these events lead from each other, and if she didn't do this, this wouldn't happen, this wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And it leads her down the bank, and then it gets away, and then she just kind of just blows up about, you know, how rotten the day has been. And then she's interrupted by someone groaning.
Yeah.
And they find someone injured, which, I don't know who played John Parker, but I think he did phenomenal acting. He sounded really, really hurt.
Yeah, he's good. I think there's something about his voice that I think in general the acting was already kind of off to me, but it wasn't poor, and I could tell that there was something going on with him. I have expected him to cry out in pain as they were trying to move him, but instead it was Papa Chuck who cried out in pain. So I don't think we got a chance to see the full extent of his acting, but he was good. He did a good job.
Yeah. Like you said, Papa Chuck tries to pick him up, and his back just kind of gives out on him, or just gets so painful, and he can't get up.
Oh, here's a question. Before we get too far, I thought of this. What kind of animal do you think John Parker is?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
Uh-huh. I was trying to remind myself through the whole episode that these people are animals.
Yeah, I don't think there's too many mentions of animals. I don't think there is any mention of that, possibly. I had to listen to it again, but I don't think there is any mention of that.
Mm-hmm. He may be some kind of deer, because then again, if he got a broken leg, you can't really do anything about that. I mean, except if it's wildwood. I mean, I guess
that's
different in the animal
world. That's dark. Let's not go there.
I'm sorry.
Like Joey's tail. Like Joey's tail.
What happened? Oh, yeah, that one.
Or Joey got his tail caught.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I mean, if we're going to be talking about anthropomorphic animals, it's kind of important. I'm guessing that they would just bandage you up and put you on a hospital bed for a little while, so that would be fine.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Collins walks on two legs anyway, right?
I'd assume, well, she is, I think she is a bear. Mrs.
I'm sorry,
Ms.
Harbor, names are hard. Let's move on. Back to this episode.
So, they are really far away from everybody. Papa Chuck can't carry him. He can't move that much. Stacy's by herself, but he mentions about signaling somebody, and then she thinks of it. Oh no, he pulls out the handkerchief.
Before then, though, he mentions that Officer Hunt is just a few miles away, and that, like, to catch him, Stacy's gonna have to run, or they could come up with some kind of signal. And then the conversation shifts, and then he mentions the handkerchief.
Yeah, and he pulls out the handkerchief, and the compact falls out.
Yep.
They don't even use the handkerchief, but because he pulled that handkerchief out, the compact comes out, because he probably would have forgotten about it otherwise.
Yeah.
And she climbs the tree, and he cautions her, but, you know, bears are... Well, I guess bears can climb trees. I guess the younger, smaller bears, I guess, are a little bit easier for them than bigger bears.
Yeah.
You know, in real life.
These bears make go-karts. I think they can climb trees.
Well, some of them can't make very good ones.
No, right.
But, yeah, Papa Chuck prays for her safety, and she gets to the top. One another great way of, you know, showing... You're telling, but you're showing, but not telling. They say what's happening because... He can't see what's happening. She's telling what's happening, and it sounds natural with that. I think it's a great writing with that. Mm-hmm.
Creative ways that you do this.
Yeah, and we cut to Officer Hunt and the troop there, and someone notices the flashing, and they send a signal back, and they all signal back with a bunch of mirrors.
Another way to describe what's going on is that one of the troop members is wanting to learn about what's going on at the top of this tree. So he says, "Is that a piece of metal up there?" And Officer Hunt goes, "No, no, it's somebody trying to signal us." And that conversation, that interchange... wouldn't happen if it was just him by himself. He would just look up and then go help. But because there's people with him there, and those people are under his care, and troop members who he wants to teach, he has taught them how to respond, and it's mentioned in the next scene that they know first aid and all of that. So I think that was really creative to have that little interchange be a part of their relationship. Even though we get a couple seconds of it, I can tell that it's it was written well.
Yeah. I also want to say the scene where we have after the commercial break with Papa Chuck getting hurt, climbing all that, and going back to Officer Hunt and them, John Campbell's score under that is really good. I have that in my notes. Mm. The music in that, I think, stands out from the rest of the episode. It's great. The undercurrent, that, you know, that dramatic beat when Papa Chuck just screams in pain. It's great music there. So we hear that they do come over and bandage him up, make a stretcher. At this point, I guess Papa Chuck is feeling better enough to walk, and Stacy said that she'll help him. But I guess he's feeling better.
I'm guessing what happened was his back was just that he couldn't bend to get up, but once he got up, he could probably stumble back home if he really wanted to. It didn't sound like his back was injured, just that he woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
Maybe. And he also is pretty old.
Yeah.
So the two walk back to town, Stacy and Papa Chuck. Stacy talks about, like, you know, how, again, she kind of reiterates her question, like, you know, all these bad things happened. Where was God in this? Papa Chuck says, you know, you could look at it being, you know, all bad things, or you could look at it being something like that really good that happened. And then I have a list of all the things here. His bad back led to him going to be fishing. Her compact, Stacy joining him for the fishing. The apples that Mr. Crawford brought for the apple pies, help him get away.
Sure.
Yeah, that one's a little bit weak. But the handkerchief from Mrs. Collins and the fishing lure that caught the fish. And it was also the day of the Wilderness Rangers camping on there. Stacy mentioned that, you know, that could all be coincidences. And Papa Chuck does a great line. I don't have it all written down here, but basically he said, "It could be dumb luck, but when you look at all that, one or two like might feel like a coincidence, but a whole string of them, basically," which I've heard this phrase before, too. Like, instead of coincidence, we could look at them as God incidents. I know, like, Mr. Whitaker on Odyssey, you know, there's no such thing as coincidences.
Well, that was just a coincidence. This you, Mr. Whitaker, episode one?
Wits flop. Wits flop. But yeah, I do have this. He says, "When you add it all up, it's kind of hard to believe that God wasn't there at every step, guiding us all the way. And when you add it all up, you know, dumb luck is pretty hard to believe." I love how this episode just builds to that. They each have these small little interruptions, these small little obstacles that happened. But when you step back and look at them, you see at what God was really trying to do there. They got to fish a little bit. I mean, they didn't catch anything, really.
They got what they wanted to do.
But something good still came out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And not the way they expected, kind of, to a certain extent. Kind of like evolution, like this random thing happened, all these things happened, a string of this, all this, you know, it's really hard to believe that. But when you look at, you know, kind of reverse engineering kind of certain thing, or just logically, kind of like with this, it proves an existence of God, because, you know, not everything is random. You can see how some random things that we see, we look back at things like, wow, God was really directing us there. And I've seen this year and last year so much, how much God's timing is so perfect. It amazes me. Like, it keeps happening, and I'm still amazed at how much how much God knows so much more than we do. And we make plans. I make plans about things, and they don't always happen the way I want them to. And then sometime later, I might find out, like, hey, that was something good that happened. It just amazes me. And I just love how this episode brings that out. Stacey, after the conversation, she wants to keep the compact the way it is as a reminder of God's grace, yeah, I think it was.
That's awesome. That's a great way to end this episode.
Yeah, and Papa Chuck brings out, you know, that's the kind of thing I should be teaching you. And it shows this episode also kind of shows a little bit more maturity, some growing experiences. We hear a lot of that with CJ, which this is the first episode without any of the club members, and the first time with just Stacey by herself, which is a very interesting episode.
Unless we count Stacey's dilemma when she had her whole half episode, but yeah.
Yeah. But this is a better episode, I think.
Yes. So, I wanted to say, as far as the moral goes, I'm really happy that you can look back and see that in your life, even this year. And if I remember in my past, I've had times like that where I've seen God intervene and take something that I wanted and make something even better out of it. But this past year, my perspective has more been shifting to, I haven't seen as much something happens that's even better on the same level of it being comparable with the previous thing, but rather it's different. And that my perspective of this, I think this is bad. I think this pain or this lack of something I wanted or this opportunity that I missed or this relationship ending or this feeling that I have, I've been viewing those as negatives. And my perspective has more been changing instead to view those as positives, because God will work everything toward, like, for good, for my good, even if it's not the good that I want. Now, in this episode, all of these coincidences work together for good that they could see, that was good that lined up with their values, helping people having an enjoyable time, which they did. She had an adventure that day. But even if it didn't, the way I would have, the reason I don't have a problem with that, because I think you can take out all the coincidences and still have all of this happen. There are different ways that they could have made it their fishing. Maybe they would have even seen the guy had that accident, and then Stacey could have worked to run to Officer Hunt or to run back into town, or the episode would have played out slightly differently, but I don't think it was 100% necessary for them to be there. It definitely made it easier, and they could see, Stacey could see how God was intervening, but I don't know that it has to be that way. And I'm okay with that. I think this episode's moral is strong, but even if you don't have that, an alternate moral could also be when she's asking, why are all these bad things happening? Have Papa Chuck say, well, why do you see it as bad? Well, because I'm not happy, because I didn't get what I wanted. Well, does God say you'll always get what you want? Well, no, but doesn't he want me to be happy? Not necessarily. There might be ways that, there might be things that he wants to teach us. Something that Odyssey did excellently in Higher Than Our Ways.
Worth it.
Yes, Worth It and Higher Than Our Ways, saying that God's ways are so much higher than ours, we may never see his plan. We may never get an answer for that. But if our faith tells us to trust him, then we will, and we should, and he will bring about a conclusion, either in this life or in the next. So even if everything turns to ruin, and something I'm trying to figure out is, does the Bible have any provisions that talk about our earthly prosperity or our earthly health? And I think there's some things in there that I still want to look for, but even if it doesn't, I still have faith. Because even if everything turns for the worst, I still trust God, because I know that his plan is something I'll never understand. So that, I think, would have been a slightly different moral, something that I'd like to hear eventually in a Paws and Tails episode, but this one does fine. And I can read both of those morals into this episode. So I like that. I like the way that this one had that, not exactly open-ended thing, but something that was kind of left up to my interpretation in some ways.
Yeah, I'm glad you got that out of that. And I do like one of the last lines the narrator, David Heath, mentions is that they don't look forward to interruptions, but now they try to look for how God might be using them for good.
Yep.
And I try to have that perspective myself. Like, things happen, like, oh, why am I late for work? Why is this happening? But then I'm thinking, like, because I've seen this kind of happen, that's kind of happened. Like, I know a time or two, you know, my family had been traveling somewhere, and we were delayed at a certain point for some reason. And then we get back on the road, and there's an accident not far up the road, and you're thinking, like, well, maybe if we hadn't been delayed, we might have been in that accident. Mm-hmm. I may not know that until eternity. Going with that perspective of, maybe God is protecting me from something. Maybe God is directing me to do something else that's going to be even better than what I'm going to be doing. I think having that perspective is very, very good to have, and it makes it, I'm not saying hard times or easy. I don't want to call it a coping mechanism, but I think it's a way to look at things that helps you get through those events. If you look at that, like, okay, God has this in eternal perspective, and I can trust him with that.
Well, I think it, even though you might not want to call it that, we're definitely called to lean on God, lean into him for that comfort in, exactly. in those times of trouble. So absolutely, that's how I cope. When nothing makes sense, that's the only way that I cope, by trusting that he knows what he's doing.
Yes. And he also brings out Romans 8:28 yep. there. Yep. Great verse.
And that's the one that's brought out in the song.
Exactly. Hey. So what did you think of the song?
I think it was very creative. But I don't think that Sandy Howell as the lead, or was that somebody else singing the lead?
No, I don't believe so. I think it's the one that plays Matilda in Blinded by the Sight, and I think it may be the one that runs up and tells Papa Chuck about the hotel, okay. But it does not sound like Sandy Howell.
Well, unfortunately, she wasn't enunciating enough, so I have to give part of this song a hard no. Because, I'm sorry, I couldn't pick up what you were saying in that verse. The lyrics are very quick in places, and for the style, it would be good, but I've listened to it a couple times, and I just couldn't exactly pick up what she was singing in there. And I assume the lyrics are out there, and that, like, you can pick up on it by listening to it more. But there just needs to be a couple more crisp consonants in there for me to hear what she was saying. And now, as far as the style goes, and as far as the lyrics go, that was fun. And I liked the two stories, one that we didn't actually hear, of the flat tire on the bicycle and the two guys ending up being friends, and then Stacy's side of the fishing trip that ended up her being able to help somebody. That was good, and Sandy Howell consistently does a great job at making these lyrics.
Yeah, it was difficult at first. Some of the words were, it goes by so fast, both for the verses when, like, I guess Stacy or whoever's singing for Stacy, and then the guy in the second verse. For the last verse, I think I had the most trouble hearing that one years later. I finally figured out, I think, all the words at some point.
Yeah.
I got kind of the gist of it, but I didn't get all of it. But I think it's still a very fun song. It's very different from other songs that we've heard in Positive House so far. I think it works great. It's also a great way to get the verse across too.
Yeah, she just straight up says the verse in the middle of the song.
Yeah. It is kind of catchy. It's one that can easily get stuck in your head. I think it's done that to me on occasion.
What was the name of this one again?
God Works All Things Out for Good.
There you go.
But yeah, this episode, it's not an episode written by David Carl. Sometimes the ones that aren't written by him are kind of hit and miss, but I think this one is definitely a hit.
Who wrote The Lighthouse?
Go look this up.
I think this is... I'm looking at my CD, so that sound is me opening up my CD album.
I heard that, yeah.
I don't think Gary Armstrong has written any episodes before this,
really?
But I think he writes some after, possibly.
Okay, well, that explained why this one felt so different.
The Lighthouse was written by... Clark Corcoran wrote The Lighthouse. I don't think Gary Armstrong has written any episodes up to this point, so if that's the case, I think it's a great first effort for Paws and Tails.
Yeah, that makes complete sense why it felt so different, and nice job. Yeah, he knew his stuff going into it.
Okay, so we have a fairly lighthearted slice of life episode. Yeah. Now we're getting into some dark territory here.
Oh, boy.
This episode is called The Scarlet Stain. This one was written by David Carl. We get him writing again.
Ooh.
Yay.
Mm-hmm.
It's also directed by him.
Yes.
And music back to Tim Hospin. Sound design by Jerry Swofford. And the song If We Confess by Sandy Howe and Nick Brown.
Are you sure the sound design wasn't by Eric Basil? Did I just write that down wrong?
Let me look at my CDs real quick. Yeah, sound design by Eric. Oh, okay. So the CD says sound design by Eric Basil, but I thought I wrote down Jerry Swofford.
Jerry Swofford did sound design for the first one. I have Eric Basil written down for this. Not that it... I think you can tell the difference between the last episode and this one because the sound design is excellent for this episode.
Okay, I think I would agree that's probably him, because if you thought that and I have the CDs, you don't have the CDs, and if you just heard it from the credits, then that's probably it.
Well, I have three big things that kind of bothered me about this episode, and they're not but none of them are strong enough to sway my opinion of this. I really like this. I think it's one of the first episodes that corresponds to the overall overarching storyline. Previously we've had Correction Course, which I just didn't like on a pure episode level. Second, there was the one that had the reference of CJ having to break the rules eventually. Which episode was that?
I think it's The Pirate's Life.
There we go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He knew the rules well enough so that and eventually he'd have to break them. There are those two. And neither of those I was super strong on. But then this one I really like, especially since it's written and directed by David Carl. Was Correction Course written and directed by David Carl as well? Sorry to make you do all this work over here, Austin.
Oh, it's okay. Just the listeners are going to have to hear this plastic opening.
Hey, I just want to know.
Yeah. He wrote Correction Course and directed it.
Rats. Okay. I'm sorry, sir. Anyway.
There are rats in that episode.
Be quiet, Austin. Okay, so the biggest thing I have here is one thing that I think would be a problem that isn't necessarily, is that the theme at the end that the song portrays is when we ask forgiveness, like God will forgive. It's the what are some of the lyrics of that one? I have the chord progression written down.
If we confess, he will forgive us.
Yeah, there we go. So and that's a good strong moral. And our main character, you could say our protagonist in this episode, is Ned. He doesn't learn his lesson here. And the other two characters who go along with that lesson, which are Stacy and Goose, really don't have a hard time getting to that conclusion because they were already feeling really weird about making that promise in the first place. Goose is very quick to break her promise to Ned about not telling anybody. And then when they ask for forgiveness for it, it seems hollow to me because, not hollow, but it didn't seem earned to me for them. And that's okay because they're not supposed to. Then we get to Ned and he's praying or about to pray. And instead he just says, no one tells me what to do. And I hear that. I'm like, oh no, that's not good. And then we get to the song. I'm like, wait a minute. Why is the song playing? Come on. We didn't resolve that. So there's something left unsettling in this episode. And I think that's fine. That was intentional. Nice job on the episode. Another thing I think would have made this an even better episode for Ned, though, was to cut the whole no one tells me what to do out of the first half of this episode, or have it be a better progression up to it. Because he's got the whole thing at the beginning where I'm 100% on his side, getting hit in the head with the ball for bonus points in this game. That's ridiculous. Why are they making him do this? And then he has a great point where he says, no, I don't want to do this. I can't even do this. And then CJ says, no, we'll take a vote. Okay, Ned, we all voted against you. He's like, you guys took a vote knowing that I wasn't able to do this? Come on. They're treating him horribly. It's a great villain arc beginning, as the cliche is. He's being mistreated, and then he turns to a life of crime. But what he does is he walks off, and he goes toward the mine. And as he's walking, he has the line where he says, nobody tells me what I can and cannot do. And then they start telling him, no, don't go there. That was a little too quick. It seemed like it was on his mind and had been something he'd been thinking about for a while. I would have liked to have seen a bit longer of a build-up to it, where CJ is being even more overbearing. Rather than him saying, nobody tells me what I can and cannot do, to say, CJ, you're not the boss of me. Why are you telling me what I can and can't do? And then have that question come up more and more. Same thing with Timothy Owl. Maybe Timothy's like, no, I wouldn't go there. He's like, why are you telling me what to do? I can make my own decisions. And then once we get to the end of the episode, have the final line from him be that culminate, that climax of nobody tells me what I can and can't do, because he's had it from CJ, Timothy Owl, and now his mom. And he's resenting it now. I would have liked to see him get to that point in this episode rather than have it be something that it seemed like he was already had established. That was something small that I can still see where the episode was going with that. And we'll talk about the positives in a second. And then the third thing is there is an editing error in here that's pretty embarrassing. Ned's mom has a line in the final scene with her, and I guess it's one of two or three scenes with her. She's got a line where she says, have you repented, at the end of one of her lines. And there's a little bit of silence, but you can hear there's room tone there, and that room tone's been throughout the rest of her voice. And then you hear very clearly the voice of David Carl saying, good, as in good take. Did you catch that?
Are you sorry you hurt God by disobeying him? That's the issue here. Have you repented?
Good. Well, no.
I did not. I know you messaged me about that. Like, I did not hear that. Like, I listened to this episode for the review in headphones, and I did not pick that up.
Yep.
I gotta get a better pair of headphones.
Other than that, I am very excited about where this is going, and because the theme isn't as important here because he doesn't learn his lesson, plot-wise, this is really intriguing.
Well, good. We had the one line from the last episode where it talks about Ned's temper and all that.
Yeah.
I don't think that probably helps too much. I don't know if that helps now, knowing that line's in there.
Well, no. I mean, his temper is fine. His temper being a problem is one thing, but him saying, nobody tells me what to do, that doesn't have to be connected to his temper necessarily. He could still have a temper and be taking it out on CJ, but it could also be for good reasons. Maybe he gets too uptight about things. Maybe he gets angry too quickly, but he could still be justified in his anger. By saying nobody tells me what to do, he sort of loses my sympathy when he gets to that point.
His credibility?
No, he still has credibility. He's just not as sympathetic a character. He's still credible. I can still imagine him having that viewpoint. It's just I didn't get to see how he got to that viewpoint.
Yeah. Like, even just like a line or two from the narrator about something happening the day before leading into that might have helped.
I don't know. I think if you just edit his lines throughout the episode, it'd be even better. But I still got it. I still understood, okay, this is the theme that David Carl wants to portray in this episode. That's fine.
Yeah. Even though you didn't like the game they were making, I assume that you liked a lot of Goose's lines.
Well, the game, I wouldn't like it if I were playing it. It's hilarious from a writing standpoint. I can remember all the rules, and it actually might be a little bit funny to play if you weren't hitting people in the head. But that Goose gets the paddle that she's using.
That's dodgeball.
Yeah, it's basically dodgeball. So the whole point of the game, if you've heard the episode, you know what it is, so I won't bother to re-explain it. Unless, I'm guessing there are people who haven't heard this episode, so yeah, man, tough luck. So Goose gets the paddle, and they're reciting the rules about smacking the mud, and then she goes, smack the tree, and goes and smacks the tree. Ow, that hurt. And then CJ goes, no, you smacked the mud. Right, oh, okay, smack the mud. And she goes with that. And her acting is so, so funny throughout the whole episode, and she's not overbearing either. Like, later on, when Ned is talking to Stacy, and surprise, she jumps out of the bush. It's really funny. She's so oblivious to everything that's going on.
Yeah, actually, when you're talking about the smacking the tree and all that, it reminds me of, hit me with that stick, Goose. Ow! Not the foot, the armor. But yeah, it is a ridiculous game, and I can see some kids probably doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is some funny moments there. I think it does put you on the side of Ned of, okay, absolutely. Yeah, this is dumb. They aren't thinking about his feelings that much. So he walks up to an old mine, which the narrator talks a little bit about this. It was an old gold mine owned by Mr. Collins.
Ooh.
And it was closed after some accidents, and there was not much gold found there.
Oh, also, sound design. Can I mention this real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
When he's walking away, there's a quick perspective shift where he's off in the distance. Then all of a sudden, Stacy and CJ, or whoever it is off in the distance as well. And I thought, what's going on? But then you hear his voice up close. So it's kind of like at that moment, there's a swap. It was an interesting move, but I really liked it right there. It's like we teleport from the rest of the club members' perspectives to his. But anyway, yes, if this does tie into the overall storyline and David Carl wrote Correction Course, I wonder what... Were they black tubes or black pipes? What was the name of it? What were they called?
They called them black tubes.
The black tubes and the rats and some other usage for those. Maybe the black tubes were used to transport this weird chemical that turns your arms red when you're sinning? I don't know. Who knows?
We'll see.
At least it's not green because of greed.
Yeah, I think this is a lot more nuanced.
I mean, he was kind of caught red-handed.
Good one. Yeah,
I thought that's where this was going. Anyway, continue.
But yeah, he goes to the mine and he discards the do not enter sign. That, you know, like, I don't know what danger looks like. Evidently not. And he gets in there and surprise!
Timothy Owl
shows up.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Was that a surprise to you?
No. I figured he'd be here. I didn't know what was going to happen, but as soon as I heard a voice, I was like, that can't be Timothy Owl. That would be too obvious. And then it was Timothy Owl. So I thought, oh, okay, yeah, that's obvious. That makes sense why he's here. And is this the first time he's been in an episode written by David Carl? He's been in two before, right?
Yeah, because David Carl did not write The Lighthouse. He did not write A Conscious Effort. Yeah, this is the first time David Carl writing for him.
Oh, Conscious Effort was Phil Lawler, the top. Yeah, okay. Yep, and I like him in this one because he's so dumb. I mean, he's smart, but he's too... I'm so upset at this guy. He's
also funny, too.
I know, he's like, I'm Timothy Owl. Most folks call me... Well, I guess most folks call me Timothy Owl. That's great. And then Ned asks, just how dangerous is it in there? No idea. That's what makes it dangerous. Why?
Timothy Owl, like you talked about, like he is smart. Like, he sounds like he's, you know, kind of oblivious or kind of dumb to a certain point, but he's very smart. At least he's very manipulative. He pushes Ned in the direction that Ned's kind of going, but in a way that Ned does not see that basically he's using reverse psychology on him, like, oh, don't go in there, it's dangerous. Well, I'm going to do it anyway, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he talks about there's gold in there, yep. You know, how rich you could be.
Yeah.
And he kind of talks about, you know, how rich guys tell others what to do. And I love Timothy Zahle said, he said, never was a truer thing said. And there's like, what? I said, I'm disagreeing with you, son. What? So yeah, they come to an old mine car that has some rusty water in it.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah.
Yeah, and Timothy tells him that he saw a nugget in there. And so he reaches down in there and he thinks he feels it, but it's starting to burn.
Ugh,
and then
yeah.
He drops it. We don't find out whether it is gold or not in this episode. He goes out in the sunshine and his hand is stained red.
Oh, red.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I'm imagining... How much was mentioned about his fur in this one? Because I've seen beavers' paws before, so they're black as far as I know.
Black or brown?
Yeah, yeah. So to be red, that's rough. That might be some kind of bleach or something in that chemical, combined to whatever other spiritual elements tied into it.
Mm-hmm. And then Timothy Owl just runs off and leaves.
Just gets out
of
there.
Ned's kind of frightened.
So Ned should definitely rat out Timothy Owl. If he was going to get in trouble, like with the law for this, he could easily say, he has an extremely easy case to say that Timothy Owl coerced him into doing it, or that he convinced him, you won't get in trouble, this won't happen. And Ned would be in a lot less trouble, and Timothy Owl would be in a lot more trouble for this conspiracy to commit crimes. But Ned doesn't rat him out in a way that I think works better than the previous episodes where Timothy Owl wasn't really acknowledged. It works better in this one because Ned thinks he's right. He doesn't have a reason to rat him out because he doesn't think he should be in trouble anyway in the first place. So maybe I'm hoping in the future Timothy meets his comeuppance. Maybe that'll be in season 4, but I don't know. Who knows?
Good thoughts there.
Ha-ha.
So Ned tries to clean it off. He doesn't tell his parents about it. And then Timothy Owl shows up again.
Yeah, he's in his house.
Yeah, stop breaking into people's houses, Timothy.
I was going to say a demonic owl, but that's putting a little bit too far. He's a weird anti-conscience owl, whatever. Who knows?
Well, you hear him slide the window up.
Yeah, he's just breaking. He's just... And Ned even says, get out of here. And he just ignores him. He's like, you can't tell people. Like, you were going in there to steal gold. Think about it for a second. And Ned said, but you said. And then he just goes on. He's an absolute loser. He's written so well. I love to hate this guy.
Yeah, that's a great villain there.
Yeah.
And he tells him, he's heard talk about poisonous chemicals and threatens him about going to jail for trespassing and stealing gold and all that.
Yeah.
And he gives him like a pseudo, well, I guess it's totally not going to happen, but a way to at least cover it up, wrap bandage around his hand, say that he just fell on it or something, and hopefully it'll go away and scrubbing all that, which it's not going away. He's scrubbing it and doesn't go away.
Yeah, he hasn't confessed his sin yet. I think that's sort of the metaphor for the episode, is that if we confess our sins, confess the stain, God is faithful and just to forgive us our sin, to cleanse the stain, right? That's the overt message mm-hmm. in this episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm hearing Ned's mom in the background a little bit because she's like, are you singing up
no,
there?
No, just talking to myself. What are you doing in here?
We're doing a duet. We're singing a duet.
Oh, yes.
There's two people up here. But yeah, so he tries to do that, but it starts spreading up his arm.
Yeah, the music is extremely dramatic there.
And instead of going to his parents or even Papa Chuck, he goes to Stacy and tries to get her to promise not to say anything about it.
I have a question. So, she already knew that he went there and trespassed, right? Like, they saw him walking toward it, and he said, don't tell me what to do.
Yeah, and they don't see him go into it, but he lets on that he was there, and then he's like, oh, you were there, or something like that. I don't know if he overtly said that or not.
So, why is he swearing them to secrecy as a prerequisite for showing them what happened? Because they already know what happened. It's not like he's going to tell them something that's going to get him in trouble.
Well, they don't know that he actually went in there and tried to steal and trespass and all that. Like,
yeah.
For all they know, that he could have just been hanging out around it, which he shouldn't have even been doing that at all.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Like, that wouldn't be illegal, but it would be different. Okay, that does make sense. Like, and he doesn't even tell her the truth about what happened. He just says he fell and got it red, and nobody's going to be the wiser except for him. That's the thing where nobody knows what's in there, apparently, but he knows that he's lying, and so that's going to remain on his conscience for a while.
But he recruits Stacy's help.
And then Goose pops out. Surprise!
And then she notices and he tries to get her to promise, but she's even less... I think she's even more reluctant than Stacy is. But they try to get some brushes and some paint cleaners, I guess, or something like that.
Yeah.
And CJ finds out about it, too.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of CJ. He does not promise.
Yeah, it's so...
You know, I'm not going to make it a promise about a thing that I don't know about.
It's so great.
Great for him.
Like, as much as of a jerk that he was at the beginning when they were playing around, I think he just didn't realize the severity of it. Here, Ned asks him, will you promise not to tell anyone? And CJ goes, no. Good on him. Good on him.
Yeah, like, he has matured some.
Mm-hmm.
But he does follow them, and they try to, you know, Stacy and Goose are trying to do it.
It starts spreading! Ah! Because they're covering up the secret. That's what's going on. I have no idea how this thing works, but apparently it's connected spiritually to, like, wrongdoing and sin and covering it up. It's weird. I don't know what's going on.
We hear... They finally convinced him to tell his mom, I guess, or go to Doc Lowell. For some reason, I forgot he was in this episode. I thought he was only, like, in The Perfect Christmas Gift, but yeah, he's in this episode, sweet. Different actor.
Was he Steve Bridges last time?
No, it was someone different. I remember the guy's voice, but it wasn't Steve Bridges. Okay. He has something that will help.
Yeah.
Did they say what the treatment was?
Yeah, it was medicine that would hurt. It would like, really hurt to get it off. And then the narrator also says that it took scrubbing and medicine and bandages.
Okay.
So... I want to mention before we get there, CJ's got a really great line. It's a good reality check for the episode, too, because it shows that David Carl knows what he's talking about when he's writing this. This goes way back to the first episode of Paws and Tails that was really holistic writing, something that I also like about Down Gilead Lane. The writer knows more than the audience does, or more than anybody does, and is able to inject that at certain points into the story. Example here, Ned is concerned about going to jail, and that was something that was brought up earlier, and CJ's like, really? You think you're going to go to jail? You think they're going to put you in jail? You're a third grader. And that shows, okay, we're still operating by real world rules. They're not going to throw an elementary schooler or a middle schooler in jail. That's something that Michael Lefebvre would write. Instead, we write something that's actually realistic here. Yeah. So I like that moment. It also changed the stakes to where, oh yeah, you're not going to jail, but you still have to face the consequences of it. Ned can't even handle that. He still doesn't back down after realizing he's not going to go to jail. Or maybe it makes it easier, because he didn't have the consequence of having to go to jail. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, we do get some really good humor there, because Goose is afraid that she'll be red all over. She said, like, you know, I'll never get to wear pink again. Children will tell stories about the strange red weasel girl.
Well, then they'll just add the word red to all the stories they're already telling.
I know. It's such a great burn there.
And nobody picks up on it. Nobody does. Poor Goose. It's a little known fact that weasels are very red.
That's good. That's good. But yeah, Ned's mom barges in, and then Ned, like, oh, that was the worst thing he was wanting to have happen, I guess, there.
Yep.
And she does not self-pedal anything, which is good for her.
Yeah. And Goose starts to explain what happened, and he tells Goose to knock it off or enough, and Ned's mom says, no, what are you talking about? Don't talk to her like that. And he's super disrespectful. Like, he's speaking pig Latin to her, like, nix the sin talk and nix the pray talk. And she's like, no, what are you talking about? I wonder if this is the normal thing. Hasn't been established that Ned struggles with this with his mom?
We haven't heard any of his parents before. The one thing we do know from Ned, about Ned from previous episodes, he's very analytical. He's the one that probably is kind of the more, I guess, worldly-wise. I don't think it's quite the term for it. More, I guess, level-headed to a certain extent, but some people may like that. Again, they might have a kind of a pride issue of, you know, or a hard time of, again, like, letting people tell them what to do and that kind of thing.
Yeah, man, I feel bad for him. I'm glad we're getting this character development, but it really makes me feel for the guy. I have no idea what's going on here.
Yeah, and his mom talks about, you know, with an attitude like that, you know, it's bound to happen again.
Yeah.
Like, you're only sorry you got caught, and I don't see anything that looks like repentance, which is great. That's a great thing to bring up.
Even though we don't get the resolution in this episode, her advice is excellent.
Yes. And Goose prays, Stacy prays, and, you know, Ned doesn't pray. And I know his mom's intentions were good. I think it's kind of like how, you know, like, some parents will, like, tell their kids, you know, say you're sorry, like, at a young age. I can understand that, but at a certain point, like, if they're not sincere about it and you don't tell them the reason why you should be asking for forgiveness and why what they did was bad, I think it'd be good for people at an authority like that to explain to them, like, the seriousness of it, kind of like how Ned's mom did with this. Like, she doesn't make him, but she strongly suggests it,
right?
But leaves it up to him, which I think is great.
Well, here's a question, nitpick, But it's important because it's part of her, what she says to him. Is it biblically accurate that we hurt God when we sin?
I think it does. I mean, not physically, but it hurts him when we disobey and seeing us, you know, going against his law. And also, he knows it hurts us. And because he loves us, he doesn't want us to be feeling the effect of sin. I mean, he died on the cross for us, went through a lot of pain, went through all that so that we wouldn't have to go through that.
Right. I'm just trying to figure out whether that's exactly the way I would phrase it. Like, I might say it saddens him. I might say it goes against what he wants. I might say it cheapens his sacrifice. I would do any of those. But I don't know that, like, hurting... I don't know if I would use the phrase it hurts him. Like, I'd have to have something in the Bible that specifically says that. Like, God is, like, pains him.
I don't think, like, it injures him. Again, it's not, like, a physical thing, like, we would feel like. Like, we feel if someone does something bad and something that hurts us or someone that we love is hurt too.
Oh, yeah.
That hurts us on a level that, you know, it's harder for us to, like, it's probably sometimes easier for us to go through hard things, but if someone else is doing that, it can hurt a lot more. I think God probably feels that too.
Okay, so if hurt is if hurt's a synonym for grieves, like if it hurts him, if it grieves him, then yeah, that works. But if it hurts as in it, I don't even know if I know what I'm saying here. I think we're fine. I think I'm okay. I'm nitpicking.
We're kind of semantics here, but yeah, I get what you're saying there. So we hear that, you know, after a while, you know, Stacy and Goose, they come out clean. And then we hear Doc Lowell talking to Ned. And he said that it went just down to his fingers or just his hand?
Just his hand, I think.
Okay, just his hand. And he said, it stopped spreading. And he says, like, must be something special or different about you.
Oh, man, I did not like that. I did not feel good about that line. I mean, it was good, but I was like, oh, man, do you know something we don't, Doc Lowell? You have no idea what you're talking about, sir.
We'll see.
And then the narrator just comes in and says that he struggles with it for years. I'm like, wait, how long does this series take place over? What's the span of time that this takes? What?
Yeah.
Is season 4 just going to be a flash forward? What?
I don't know. Yeah, he says Ned had it for a long time, years, and there's times that it would spread, and sometimes it just went back to just his hand. And he says, but that's a story for another time.
Man, wow. What?
And then we come to the song, which...
It's fine.
I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with the song. I think, like, it's very understated. I don't know if that's the right word. It's very simple. Kind of like how Jesus, I Thank You from High Noon.
It's very simple.
Like, it's not a whole lot of instruments with it. You know, it's very simple. Like, I think it works on its own. And it works with, like you said, with Stacy and Goose. Again, I know it's not talking about Ned. But I think if they didn't have that there, kind of like how with, like, the Olivia story arc. Like, each episode they wanted to have a point of reference that's a resolution or something that they brought something up, they would address it and how to take care of that, even though they left some things open for a next episode.
Yeah.
So I can understand why they wanted to do this kind of song with it. And again, Sandy Howell, great singing there.
Yeah. I mean, what else are they going to do? It's the theme of the episode to a certain extent, even though Ned doesn't learn it, and every Paws and Tails episode has a song. So it's fine. I was picking up on the chord progression in the background. I really love that. There are certain parts when it goes to, like, a minor chord, and there are certain cadences, I think, is what I learned this year in theory. I didn't pay super close attention to music theory this year, but there are certain parts of the song that I really enjoyed, and it was simple enough to where it didn't seem like it was being overdone or overplayed, like When You're Wrong, You're Wrong, I thought, from Correction Course kind of did, but I like this one.
Yeah, I believe Sandy, she elevates whatever song she sings. Even if it's, like, not a good song, just her singing alone makes it so much better.
Uh-huh. So when are we going to interview her? When? I really want to.
That might happen if things change for this review.
I really want to. I really want to talk to her.
But do you want to talk about what happens after the song?
Oh, no. I turned the episode off at the song and started doing the review. It was great.
Are you being facetious?
Yes. We get a post-credit scene. We get a post-song scene. What? This is only the second time this has happened. The first time it happened was episode 1.
Yep.
So Timothy Owl is, he's either schizophrenic or he has a mouse in his pocket.
Surprise. Yeah, I have it written down.
Surprise.
Yeah, I have it written down here. I think I have the whole thing written down here.
Read it.
The Scarlet Stain didn't spread like we hoped, but only because of CJ. That cub is getting to be a real problem. I think Ned might have just become real useful. A lot of pride in that boy. Yes, sirree. Next time we'll try something special.
Ooh, okay. So, I don't know what the plan is. I don't know if they think that everybody in Wildwood is that easily manipulated, like the kids are, to cover up the truth and have the stain spread. Because if you've got people like CJ and people like Stacy and Goose who instantly get the stain cleared up, it doesn't seem like the good people of Wildwood would allow that kind of a thing to persist. Even if it exacerbates how they're already feeling, I think there's always going to be people like Papa Chuck who are going to see what's going on in town if the stain spreads to everybody and think, whoa, guys, what's going on here? And have them all repent and get the stain cleared up. But so I don't know what the point is there or what Timothy Owl's plan is if he's got, like, if he's by himself and he's just talking to himself or if there's somebody else there with him. Or what's going on? Because I love how this episode makes me feel better about Timothy Owl in the past by explaining why he was doing those things and why he's a negative conscience. That's great. I don't think that fixes my icky feelings about those episodes because those kind of need to stand on their own. They didn't make it seem like this is going to be explained later. But now I appreciate that and I'm looking forward to seeing what exactly he tries in the future. Now, this having something to do with Mr. Collins, I think ties in to Correction Course in a curious way. And I can't make any connections yet, but I'll be looking for it. I'll put it that way.
I have a really big grin on my face right now. That's all I'll say.
Hey, I haven't made any theories yet. It's not like when I predicted the whole plot of Haunted Waters after listening to the first episode. Like, that was fun. That was fun.
Well, I know we're going a little bit long here, but I was wanting to read a little bit from the discussion guide for this episode. I think it might clear up some of the questions you might have had about Ned here. I've taken out some parts of it because some of it might be spoilery a little bit. But this, I think, will explain a good bit of, make it a little bit clear, I think, for what's going on.
I'm going to say this again, Austin. I highly appreciate how careful you've been with not giving me spoilers. I don't know how invested I'm going to be in the arc plot of season 3, but apparently it's so important to you that you've kept me from any spoilers about it. So thank you. I don't have anything. I'm super proud.
Oh, you're welcome. I hate being spoiled on stuff too, so I want to make sure I return the favor to people. I guess I didn't say that quite right. I don't like spoiling other people, even if they spoil me.
Yeah, that's great.
Anyway, so David Carl says this. I was both excited and nervous in the process of creating this episode. You think that for all the experience we have with sin, we would understand it better. Sin is like a disease that numbs the very pain it causes. As a result, we ignore what should cause us to panic. We are often not bothered by sin unless it is what we consider a big one. Even then, we come up with ways to minimize it. We don't cheat on our taxes. We fudge a little. We don't lie. We misrepresent. And the numbness spreads. To complicate matters, we often seem to get away with our sin. If we get away with it for very long, we become accustomed to it and begins to feel normal. The numbness goes deeper. The next thing that happens is that we begin to lose our ability to even recognize sin. This is the beginning of the end. Because the effects of sin can be so stealthy, so annoyingly invisible, I chose to explore what it would be like if there was an instant physical ramification of sin. That's the experience Ned the Beaver is in this episode.
Ooh.
Ned is a complicated little fellow. He is arguably the smartest one of the bunch, but he's also a poster child for pride. The amazing author Andrew Murray in his book Humility says, "Pride, the loss of humility, is the root of every sin and evil. Wounded pride pushes Ned to go into the abandoned mine shaft, and it is not Timothy Owl that gets him to stick his arm into the ore cart. It's selfish pride." As the episode ends with the other kids repenting and getting healed, Ned chooses to remain stained. He really doesn't want a scarlet red arm, but he's not willing to humble himself before God. By default, he remains marked by sin, as we all are, as long as we resist the truth and the forgiveness of God. I hope that this episode will help you begin a discussion with your kids about how we are all marked by our sin. Even when we are not caught, unrepentant sin always leaves us stained. Ned's descent into the disease of sin has begun.
I would argue that he might have done the same thing if Timothy Owl weren't there, but Timothy definitely exacerbated the whole thing.
Yeah, well, he talks about how it wasn't Timothy Owl that made him do it. It was his pride that did it.
Yeah, but I still don't have good feelings about Timothy Owl.
Well, yeah, that's to be expected.
Okay. Anyway, I get what he means, yes.
I'm guessing that maybe clears up a little bit. Like, it's a physical thing, and then, but it's also a spiritual thing, but it's, you know, in this world, things are a little bit different than ours. And I think it works well. And also, too, they don't bring up the verse, I think, in this episode, but, you know, about how, is it Isaiah? I think it's one of the prophets talks about, you know, though your sins be scarlet, they should be white as snow.
Yes.
Like, we don't usually associate sin as being the color of red. Usually we consider it, like, the color of, like, black. Like, someone having a black heart or something like that. Mm-hmm. But really, I don't think the Bible even brings up that color for, like, talking about sin. It's actually red.
I was thinking The Scarlet Letter, which is a book I need to go back and read again, because I did not appreciate it the first time I read it, and I need to again. Won't spoil it for that, but scarlet and red is definitely a mark of sin in that book.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't read that book, but yeah, that makes sense.
Be interested to hear your thoughts on it.
Quick thing here is, I was wondering, I had hinted about this when we talked about Crescent Course, characters behaving badly or whatever. Uh-huh. So, do you think this episode makes it more believable or more, I guess, palatable to have Ned acting this way versus how the other kids were acting in Crescent Course?
100%. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because, like I was saying at the beginning of this, I can see why Ned is acting this way. He's tired of people telling him what to do, people running over him, not listening to him, and he wants to do things his way. So he just goes and starts walking, and once he hears about Timothy Owl about this, he's like, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do something for myself once. And back in Crescent Course, it was, these kids should be more intelligent and more understanding rather than malicious in what they're doing. And they weren't being malicious about it. It wasn't something deep within them that had to be rooted out necessarily. It was just something on the surface. They just weren't paying attention. And that annoys me when it's something that superficial and something that I'm like, guys, you were just talked to about this. Stop acting like children. This is one where Ned isn't acting like a child. He's acting like he's acting like an older teenager in a way, or even somebody who's going through complex thoughts about who do I listen to in authority, or what rules do I obey? And it's not just I'm doing this because I'm impulsive. It's I'm doing this because there's something deep within me that is compelling me to do this, rather than the conscience that it was brought up in this episode, like multiple voices telling him, like, this isn't a good idea. Timothy Owl is leading down the wrong way. You're going to get hurt. Things like that. Not listening to those is a conscious effort, you could say.
Uh-huh.
Here. Rather, in Crescent Course, it was just, yeah, we're going to ignore what Papa Chuck just said. It was weird then, and I think it's done much better here.
Well, good. So, yeah. Overall, this episode, I like quite a bit. Like, it's difficult to hear a character like this turning this way. But I think the episode earns it. We believe that this is happening, and we're also concerned about this character, too. I think it ups the stakes for what's happening in Wildwood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm excited to see what happens next.
Speaking of what's next, the next two episodes we'll be talking about are called If the Tooth Be Known and The Grecian Urn. And we will hear, like I mentioned earlier, we will hear that play that they talked about in Plans in the Breaking. And in the other episode, we will hear a return to the Collins Mansion.
Oh, furthering the plot?
We'll see.
Yay! Okay.
Well, this has been fun, Michael. I was really looking forward to this, talking about these episodes. And after the next two that we're talking about, the episodes following that are going to be super, super, super involved, like this last episode has been. So,
man.
I'm really looking forward to finishing season one with you.
Well, why don't we accelerate it? Let's do that as quickly as possible. How about that? Let's get back to this.
All right, let's talk about Mountain Dew.
Oh, no, not that. Stay sane. Hey, thanks, Austin. It's great to be here again. Go listen to Return to Gilead, guys.
Yep, do that. And listen to Paws and Tails if you haven't already. About to finish up season one. If you haven't heard the episodes, go back and listen to them. And we'll talk to you all in the next one.
Yeet.
Stop the recording!